Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 7, the sacrifice performed by Daksha, text 47. Saprasidatvam asmakam makamksatam. Darshanante paribrasta satkarmanam.
Darshanante paribrasta satkarmanam.
Kirtyamane nribirnamni yagesate.
Kirtyamane nribirnamni yagesate.
Yagya vignaksayam yanti tasmai nama.
Yagya vignaksayam yanti tasmai nama.
Saha.
Saha.
That same person.
That same person.
Prasida.
Prasida.
Be pleased.
Be pleased.
Tvam.
Tvam.
You.
You.
Asmakam.
Asmakam.
Upon us.
Upon us.
Akanksatam.
Akanksatam.
Awaiting.
Awaiting.
Darsanam.
Darsanam.
Audience.
Audience.
Te. Your. Parivrista.
Parivrista.
Fallen down.
Fallen down.
Satkarmanam.
Satkarmanam.
Of whom the performance of sacrifice.
Of whom the performance
of sacrifice. Kirtyamane.
Kirtyamane.
Being chanted.
Being chanted.
Nribi.
Nribi.
By persons.
By persons.
Namni.
Namni.
Your holy name.
Your holy name.
Yagya Isha, O Lord of Sacrifice. Te,
your.
Yagya Vikna, obstacles. Saya,
destruction.
Yanti,
attain.
Tasmai,
unto you.
Namaha,
respectful obeisances.
Translation. Dear Lord, we were awaiting your audience because we have been unable to perform the yajñas according to the Vedic rituals. We pray unto you, therefore, to be pleased with us. Simply by chanting your holy name, one can surpass all obstacles. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you in your presence. Purport. The Brahmana priests are very hopeful that their sacrifice would be carried out without obstacles now that Lord Vishnu is present. It is significant in this verse that the Brahmanas say, simply by chanting the holy name we can surpass the obstacles, but now you are personally present. The performance of Yajna-Vedaksha was obstructed by the disciples and followers of Lord Shiva. The Brahmanas indirectly criticized the followers of Lord Shiva, but because the Brahmanas were always protected by Lord Shiva, Shiva's followers couldn't do any harm to their prosecution of the sacrificial process. It is a saying that when Krishna protects someone, no one can do him harm. And when Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can protect him. The vivid example was Ravana. Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. And when Lord Ramachandra wanted to kill him, Lord Shiva could not protect him. If some demigod, even Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, wants to do harm to a devotee, Krishna protects the devotee. But when Krishna wants to kill someone, such as Ravana or Hiranyakasipu, no demigod can protect him. Om Ajnana Timanandasya Yanandana Salakya Shakchura Militam Yanata Smai Sigura Vendaha. The Brahmanas were truly qualified Brahmanas. Because a Brahmana is one who is always acting according to prescribed duty. It is said, pravitim cha nivritim cha. He knows what to do and what not to do. And therefore, the Brahmana is following a path of prescribed duty. And a Vaishnava also, equally, is accepting the principle of prescribed duty. One is not acting whimsically. One is not just doing whatever he likes It is said that Prabhupada had some new disciples, and then he was speaking, and then one was not there. And then Prabhupada asked, where did he go? And then they said, oh, he went to chant to the cows. Prabhupada didn't like that, you know. Why is he not here, you know? Why is he chanting to the cows? He's very whimsical, very whimsical. So, in this way, one must act according to prescribed duty, and one must not just make up his own process, his own idea of what he wants to do, but rather steadily perform a process, patiently. Of course, to follow a regulated process is not always easy, because we do have a body and a mind, and the three modes of material nature are affecting the body and the mind. And sometimes body is not well, sometimes mind is not well, and still the prescribed duty remains. So the strength, brahminical strength, or brahma tejas, the power of the brahmana, comes actually from this regulated performance of prescribed duty. Because, first of all, knowledge is required. Jnanantaham savijnanam idam vakshami ase sataha yad jnanam tehu vyuhu nyat kyatavam avasisyate. That the brahmanas or devotees are supplied with transcendental knowledge by the Supreme Lord, and then one knows everything about both spirit and matter. Then one understands the purpose of the material world, and one understands the spiritual world. So, such knowledge is very important. But then, there are duties which are pertaining to that knowledge. Duties that mean that we understand the purpose of the world is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and devotional service to Him. So, by acting upon that knowledge and engaging in devotional service, one gets practical experience from that devotional service. Then, jnanintaham savijnanam. Then there is vijnana. Then there is realized knowledge. So, realized knowledge requires utsaha nishchaya daryat, enthusiasm, determination and patience. Otherwise it is not possible to come to realized knowledge. So these are all qualities of the brahmanas, because the brahmanas are very fixed and very tolerant. So therefore they are able to fix themselves, to fix their minds on prescribed duty. Whereas those who are under the influence of the lower nature, their minds are very restless and fickle, and they cannot fix themselves. Therefore Prabhupada said, this boy is very restless. He's going to chant to the cows. What is this? Right. Not that one cannot sometimes chant to a cow. It is not that Prabhupada meant you cannot chant to cows, although he did say, when another devotee was chanting to cows, Kulashekhar, it seemed to be quite popular to chant to cows. And when another devotee started to chant to cows, Prabhupada said, what is the point of this? They cannot hear. They do not have the ears to hear. Of course, they can hear to some extent, but not in the same way as a human being. Because in the human form of life, one can hear and actually take up the process of devotional service. Whereas animals, they cannot just, by our regular chanting and reciting Bhagavad Gita, one day a cow knocks on the door and says, I want to join. that's not the position of an animal. But animals can become purified if they are engaged in service. For example, when the milk of the cows is offered to the Supreme Lord, then the cows are benefiting and making spiritual advancements. And in this way, we can defeat the vegans, because we can say, you have a toothless philosophy. You are against the mistreatment of animal, and meanwhile, you are just protesting and holier than thou and not partaking in it all, but ultimately you can't change the world. You can't do anything about it. Animals are mistreated. You cannot actually benefit the animal. You can just protest. But the process of devotional service is so brilliant that one can take the products of the cow and offer them to Krishna. And then the cow makes advancement. And then one can have nice butter and cheese and many nice preps, which you guys cannot have. No, so you're vegans. No, not a lot. But we can have this delicious cheese and some and Shrikant and all these preparations. And it's all bona fide, because the cow is actually being blessed in this way. Just see. It's better in all respects. Everyone gets better of it. The cow better, and so do we. You know, yum, yum, yum. In this way, we can see how nice Krishna consciousness is. The Brahmanas were qualified Brahmanas, and they knew very well what their prescribed duties were. They were systematically trying to perform a yajna properly, but then due to this situation where Daksha offended Lord Shiva and all the reactions that came of there, the whole yajna was upset. So the Brahmanas were very sorry that that had happened, because they would have liked to do a nice sacrifice. However, somehow or other the Supreme Lord appeared. So the Brahmanas understood very well that the purpose of sacrifice is to satisfy the Supreme Lord. Therefore, since the Supreme Lord appeared in one way, we are closer to our purpose, because now we can approach the Lord in person. Still, having the darshan of the Lord doesn't necessarily mean the Lord is satisfied. The Brahmanas also understood that. Therefore, we should still try to pacify the Lord and apologize for the fact that we did not satisfy him in sacrifice. Now we may have the mercy of the Lord, but in the sense that he is before us, and this is great mercy. But still, we need more mercy. Still, we need more mercy. Just like Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami recognized Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was instructing him and gave him all these transcendental instructions. And Sanatana Goswami understood them very well with his intelligence. Still, at the end, he prayed to the Lord and said, please benedict me that these instructions may manifest in my heart. So it's very interesting that even just a philosophical understanding was not enough, but that they had to be manifest within his heart, to the point where he could just fully dedicate himself to transcendental knowledge. It's one thing to know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. We know. We have heard from authorized source, and therefore we know. This movement is quite amazing, because this movement, all the members know. Prabhupada used to refer to little Saraswati, the daughter of Shamasundara and Malati, who was preaching very nicely at four years of age. Who is Krishna? She would ask. They didn't know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, very nice. Very nice. She's doing very well. So even a child knows in this movement. We know, but then again, we also don't know. We know and don't know at the same time. Because we know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but really what it means, we don't know. If we fully would know what it means that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we would get the topmost ecstatic symptoms and roll over the ground with hair standing on end and tears shooting from our eyes. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were so many tears coming from his eyes that some people were saying, this is against the laws of physics. There is more water coming out of his body than is in than there is inside a body. Where is all this water coming from? This is not logic. It's not possible that so much water is coming from a body. It wasn't just a few tears. Everyone was getting wet, and the tears were shooting in all directions. It said that in the Jagannath temple there was a gutter, and the gutter was filling up with water from the tears of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he was standing next to the Garuda Stamba to take darshan. So it was just amazing. Amazing. So many tears. That was impossible. Wow. So in this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was breaking all the laws of nature, and everyone was amazed seeing his ecstatic symptoms. So a devotee who is truly knowing who is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is fully realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his heart, and then experiencing Krishna in his heart. And that's another level than understanding who is Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although it's very good, Krishna, who is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But still, to realize in the heart. And that is our mission. And equally so, the brahmanas, they knew that really they needed the blessings. We don't know if these brahmanas actually had a full understanding of pure devotional service, or if they wanted secondary blessings from their sacrifice. Some blessings to improve the material conditions of life. Whatever may be, maybe. But a devotee, he will just simply understand, let me realize more and more who Krishna is within the heart. And day by day, let me understand more about Krishna and hear more about Krishna and about Krishna's amazing arrangements and how everything is connected to Krishna. And in this way, see everything in connection with Krishna. That is Bhagavatam. Atra sarga visargas cha. It begins to describe sarga and visarga, the primary creation and the secondary creation. And it begins to describe sthanam, posanam, uttaya, the maintenance of the universe, the protection of the devotees, and the creative principle. And it describes manvantaresu ishanukata. It describes this the manvantars. It is said in one day of Brahma, there are 14 Brahma, 14 manus. So each manu is supposed to live something like 91 divya yugas, or cycle of 4 yugas is a divya yuga. So 91 divya yugas, long time. And these manus are described to be the forefathers of mankind. They were Swayambhuva Manu was the mental son of Lord Brahma, and the first of the Manus, who is whose wife was Satarupa, and who then populated the entire universe, because they were actually the first couple, right? Like you could say the Adam and Eve of the Vedas, Swayambhuva Manu and Satarupa. Because prior to that, Lord Brahma had mental sons that came by mystic power from his mind, and they themselves were very powerful. And they could also create other beings from their mind, but they were not inspired to do it. And so the universe wasn't becoming very populated. But between Swayambhuva Manu and Satarupa, this male-female attraction worked very well. So because we understand, because actually that attraction is based on adhiras, right? the original transcendental taste which exists in the relationship between Radha and Krishna. And therefore, that is the ultimate taste there is. And then the perverted reflection thereof existed in the relationship between Swayambhuvaman and Satana. So to understand Krishna and how Krishna expands himself, how Krishna really manifests himself in all the various energies, and how he manifests himself in his svamsa forms, in his own forms, his own parts and parcels, such as Garbhadaksaya Vishnu, Kshirdaksaya Vishnu, or how Lord Krishna enters into every atom as Paramatma. And that one understands. And then one understands Bhumirapomano Vayukamana Mudyaivacha, the material energy, Krishna's separated energy. And finally, Apareya Mitastranyam Prakritim Vinime Param, also the separated living entity, the Vibhinamsa, the separated part and parcel of the Lord, the Jiva. So in this way, we have so many different energies of the Lord, and actually, these are all different manifestations of Krishna. In one sense, it is true, there is no difference between the living entity and Krishna, because the living entity is also part and parcel of Krishna, and of the same nature as Krishna. And in that sense, the living entity is the same, of the same nature as Krishna, but and he is part and parcel of Krishna, but a separated part and parcel of Krishna. And he is never Krishna. Rasaham apsakunteya, Krishna is the taste in water. But water is never Krishna. Although the taste in water is certainly Krishna. Right? So in this way, Krishna manifests all his different energies and is revealing himself. The brahmanas were performing sacrifice and had their purposes of satisfying the Lord, which is indeed the goal of life. But it appears that they were satisfying the Lord for gaining some other benefit than just pure devotional service to the Lord. The devotees of the Lord are satisfying the Lord for only one reason, to satisfy the Lord. Their goal is to satisfy the Lord. They're not satisfying the Lord for some other reason. Oh Lord, I'm satisfying you because help me with overcoming my problems. Oh my Lord, I'm satisfying you. Please protect us. This is all a lower platform of functioning in devotional service. The pure devotee of the Lord knows that whatever the Lord's intentions may be, whatever may occur, the Lord will surely protect us. Surely the Lord will make sure that the greatest calamity will never fall upon us. It is stated that neha vikramana sasti pratyavayana vichyate svalpamapi asya dharmasya trayate mahato vayat. The most dangerous type of fear is described as the fear to become covered by nescience and to be forgetful of devotional service. So in the Bhagavatam we find a description that aham vedni, Lord Shiva is speaking. He says, aham vedni, sukho veta. Sukho veta and vyaso vetana veti. Yeah. Which means that I may know, Lord Shiva says, I may know, Sukadev Goswami may know, and Vyasadev may know or may not know. So he said, that's one of these famous verses in Bhagavatam where you go like, strange, you know. Vasudev may know or may not know. How is that possible? So My spiritual master taught me that we should understand that in the context of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's explanations to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained the Admaram verse to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he gave 60 explanations and then one extra. So total 61 explanations. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had before that already given 9. Yeah. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then explained the verses without touching upon the explanations of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was amazed, he was shocked. He said, no one can give so many explanations. And he accepted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The seed of that had already been planted by Gopinath Acharya, who was a devotee, and who had already argued to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had just, how can he be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And had given so many Shastri quotes, impossible, etc. But after these explanations, he could see he is the Supreme Personality of God. And he said, no one in this world could give so many explanations. And see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then explained that, he said, actually, there are unlimited meanings to this verse. So not only these meanings that I've given, there are so many more meanings. There's no limit to the meanings of all the verses in Bhagavatam. So actually, every verse in Bhagavatam has unlimited meaning. So in that way, in that context, one can understand Vyasadeva may know or may not know. Yes, he may know to some extent, but he may not fully know. He has faithfully collected all the knowledge that he heard. And he was specially empowered that he could do so, because he had tremendous intelligence that he was able to remember all these texts. Yeah. No computers. It was not just put it on the hard disk and then print it all out and that was the first. It was all like remembering it somehow or other, hearing all this knowledge, collecting it, hearing it, assimilating it and writing it down, basically. He was simply writing down what he had heard. So whether he fully grasped it or not, yeah, was not the issue. He simply passed it on as he heard. So this is a very important point, because it reveals something about Guru Tattva. Yes. That whether a spiritual master may know everything, yes, he knows everything in the sense that he knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that devotional service to Krishna is the purpose of anything. Therefore, he knows the purpose of everything. And therefore, he knows everything. But he does not know every detail about everything. That's not necessary. And he may not know everything about everything. Every technical part of the philosophy, he may not know. He may not know. Yeah? Like that. So that's interesting. Yeah. But he knows that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Prabhupada in one lecture said, it is not necessary to be a great scholar to be a spiritual master. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stated, Sei Krishna Tattva, Yei Krishna Tattva Veta Sei Guru Ma. Anyway, that's but still, the spiritual master is also representing the scriptures, and therefore must live according to the scriptures, must teach the scriptures, must explain the import of the Vedic literatures, and teach his disciples to do the same. It's the definition of the Vayu Purana. So he must be very knowledgeable. Anyway, then that verse, it said that Vyas, he may know or may not know. But Lord Shiva says, I may know, and Sukadev Goswami may know. So now it even gets more bewildering. Yeah? We thought we just figured it out, and now it even gets more bewildering. How can they know? So, well, here we may consider that Sukadev Goswami, did he know every detail about the unlimited energies of Krishna? No. Because nobody knows that, we know. Even Krishna himself doesn't know. So if it is stated that Sukadev Goswami may know, then what does he know? Well, we're knowing one thing about Sukadev Goswami. We know about Sukadev Goswami that he was in the womb of his mother, didn't want to come out. He was fully Brahman realized, and then he heard this Bhagavatam spoken, and it is even mentioned somewhere that Krishna personally had to come to reassure him that yes, you will not fall prey to Maya, because he was thinking, my father, Vyasadeva, he is married, so if he's so transcendental, why is he married? So I will not come out of the womb, I'll stay here. But finally, Krishna said, no, it's alright, if you remember me, if you remember Srimad Bhagavatam, you will never be conditioned. So Sukadev, when he came out of the womb, he did not waste a second with anything. He was already grown up, so he didn't need to waste time with growing up, right? Which is a lot of waste of time. We take years, you know, before we finally figure it out, what it's all about. But Sukadev, from birth, he had already figured it all out. And he didn't bother with anything. He didn't bother with getting nice clothes, you know. Pure wool. Gift from someone. So, he didn't bother. He just... no clothes. No social entanglement whatsoever. Nothing. Didn't stop to accept the Brahmin threat that his father was offering him, just walked away, and just totally oblivious to the world. And just, so Sukadev Goswami was constantly meditating on Krishna. Constantly. There was not a moment that he was not meditating intensely on Krishna. He just made it his business, only Krishna and nothing but Krishna all the time. Smartavyam satatam vishnur vishmatavyo najatasit sardavirini seidushur etayor ebukim karam. Therefore Sukadev Goswami knew actually the Vedas very well, because it is said that all the regulative principles and all the injunctions of the Vedas are simply the servants of that one purpose, to always remember Krishna, never forget him. And Lord Shiva, everyone knows Lord Shiva, he's seated under a banyan tree, he has a serpent around his neck, and he sits there in meditation, deep meditation. Even his wife cannot distract him, it says. Even Parvati, if Lord Shiva, when Lord Shiva is in meditation, even she cannot distract his attention. So deep is meditation. He's totally renounced, not interested in anything of this world, and always meditating on Krishna. So say, smartavyam satatam vishnu vismartavyo vijatrasit. So, this movement is meant for that purpose, to mold our lives around just very directly Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Just like yesterday, after we came back from the shop, people said, so I heard you liked the shop. I said, yes, I did like the shop. So it was a very nice arrangement and everything. All the... very sattvic and all the different things on the shelf, a very nice collection of things. And he said, well, you know, he said, those things, we have to have them, because otherwise, you know, you can actually accept it. But the real thing is the prasada. The real thing is the prasada. I thought that was a nice remark, because that's spiritual. That was a spiritual remark. That's it. The real thing is the prasada. Because that's Krishna, that's direct. That's not indirect, that's not undercover. Vyasadeva went indirect, right? You know, and then and we remember when he started to preach indirectly, he became despondent. So, of course, we are in the world, and we are all, and we need to create a forum where people will listen to us. So, Vaishnava must be very intelligent to penetrate into the heart of the kingdom of Maya in disguise. Vaishnava just disguises himself very well and presents his and basically functions like a spy. Right? Just like spies are living undercover in some country and just act as if they are like everybody else, but meanwhile are working for a whole different cause. Devotees also. They live like spies. Yes, in one sense, undercover. Spies of Krishna. We are spies of Krishna who are entering into this to infiltrate the material world. And so we have all kinds of. We have secret agents and we have open agents like, okay, sannyasis, you know, like flesh, orange, red. What is that orange speck walking there 1 kilometer away? Right? You know, a big pole, right? There's a crowd of 100,000 people, and still you can see where the sannyasi is, because he has his stick in his hand. It's an amazing, again, a very smart design, actually. Very tricky, very smart. This Vedic culture could never have been designed by a human being, because everything is just so smart, and so many multi-purposes behind everything. Okay, you know, I cannot walk around it very easily either, right? Your mind, body, and words are surrendered to Krishna, and if you didn't know it, this is here to remind you, okay? It's a big... So, Danda is my friend. Wherever we go, we have our friend to remind us of Krishna. Anyway, so there are some who take this, the position of being open representatives, and other times undercover agents. And all these things are required. But whether we are undercover or whether we are open, right, the substance of it all is ultimately the holy name and Krishna Prasadam and Krishna directly. And that is our main purpose. So even in our preaching, if we keep that strong in the forefront, then our spiritual life remains very strong. And then our activities are very spiritual. And our purpose is very, very strong. Sometimes we are having to do a lot of activity which is not directly Krishna conscious. And then, when that activity is not directly Krishna conscious, then we have to offer whatever fruits we get from that activity to Krishna to purify it. But that's austere, very austere. Having a job is austere. One has to be in a very mundane atmosphere and then take the fruits and offer them to Krishna. Otherwise, there's nothing in that, in all that labor, there's nothing. Totally nothing. But then if with the results one maintains a very nice Krishna conscious ashram and does nice devotional service, then that will also be enough. Krishna will also protect. Anyhow, so as a movement, for the sake of strategy, we are sometimes preaching in a tactful way. Just like Prabhupada was on a morning walk. And on the morning walk, he says to someone who comes walking by, his whole group of devotees, and some karmi comes by, and Prabhupada says, "Good morning." And he said, "But Prabhupada, why are you saying good morning? Why didn't you say Hare Krishna?" Prabhupada said, "No, I said good morning so that he could wish us a good morning. And that he could do some devotional service like that." So it's one thing, we can see, to engage people passively. It is one thing that they hear the holy name. But it is another thing to engage them actively in service. And you can see that that is important, that we somehow or other in our preaching are not just giving out the transcendental sound vibration and people are on the receiving end, but we have to actively engage them in devotional service. Of course, Prabhupada was very expert in that very first public lecture in Butler. Right, Prabhupada was early, and he was sitting already in the hall, and then he was sitting on one of the seats in waiting, and then some man came to sit next to him, and there was a little talk here and there, and then it was time for the program to begin, and they announced Swami Bhaktivedanta, and then Prabhupada stood up, and he told that man, "Oh, I have a box here with some books. Can you please look after for me?" Okay. And then Prabhupada was on the stage and giving a lecture, and after the lecture he announced about the books, that there's also these books, and he said, "Sir, yes, yes, can you please show the books, right?" Yes. And then, you know, said, "Yes, you can, to the audience, you can purchase these books. Yes, you can go to this gentleman, you give him the money, etc." And he just totally engaged him, you know, and made him like sell the books, and you know, and took the money for Prabhupada nicely, gave it all. And it was immediately very nice. Prabhupada engaged him, Prabhupada immediately trusted him, gave him the trust. And if you give someone trust, you know. And he understood, wow, he doesn't even know me. And he tells me to take the money, you know. You really feel like, wow, you know, I have to now, huh? Because, you know, I mean, some stranger tells you, take the money, okay. Money. But Prabhupada gave him trust, and in this way brought out his better self. Because if someone trusts you so much, you also feel like being, like living up to it. So, how nice Prabhupada engaged him. So, the other day, I was in Vrindavan, and one day Brahmananda was giving a lecture, and he was giving, of course, a very nice lecture all about Prabhupada, different stories, and at one point, he said, you know, in the beginning, when we first came, Prabhupada never asked us to do anything. He never asked us to do anything. He would just do it all. He was cooking, he was cleaning, he was doing the whole Sunday feast, everything. And nobody helped, right? Nobody. And Prabhupada never asked anyone. He said, but as soon as somebody offered a little bit, then immediately Prabhupada said, oh yes, thank you very much, yes, you can do this. And then he gave him immediately a lot. Then immediately another was like, wow. It wasn't like, then you weren't helping, then you just were responsible. Then he just gave, you know, so can I help washing? Yes. You can help washing the pot? Yes. And then next moment you were responsible of, you know, yes, that was then your service. Okay, you're washing the pots like that. So he gave like quick a lot of responsibility. But he never forced it upon people. He waited till they were offering. He said that that's how he conquered us. That's how he conquered us. So that was really interesting point. I thought. Anyway, the point of engaging people and not just propaganda. We do so much propaganda as a movement. We print a million brochures. You know, how many brochures does ISKCON have? Right, so many, and they're very nice. It's good. I mean, very informative. What we need brochures. We hand out invitations. We do Harinam, even give out Prasada, and so on. But yet, we have to bring people to the other level of themselves becoming active servants, of doing service. Right? Then we break through. Then they'll increase their service little by little by little. But it must be done with great tact, right? Because if one pushes, then people will run away from Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada was expert. He didn't push. At least not then. but once they were more and more engaged, then also the pressure came. Started to push more and more. And he gave them very difficult assignments. Brahmananda had to go and get Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita published. It's not so easy, you know. I mean, now it may sound, well, you know, but like some unknown writer has written a book and just go find a publisher. I mean, it's like, you know, you know, I mean, publishers are not waiting to publish books, you know, from some unknown writers. So many people write books. But Brahmananda went, and he went to Macmillan, one of the biggest, really one of the biggest. And when he came in, they said, "Oh, a Bhagavad Gita. We were just looking for a Bhagavad Gita." So Krishna was also involved in the whole thing. Yeah. And so it all worked like that. Yeah. It just somehow all worked. So it wasn't Brahmananda's great credit that he convinced these Macmillan people, but it was his credit that he went there. And then Krishna did the rest. He just tried the biggest publishing house. And that, you know, many would not have done. Right? Many would have thought, well, you know, they will never take it. Nah, come on. You know, it's really, they only take famous writers. Right? So better I try some small little publishing house somewhere for new writers. You know? That would have been mundane logic. But no. Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita is important. It's the most important book in the world. It must go to a big publisher. Must go a big way. You had to be big to think like that. And Brahmananda was the right man. So in this way, Krishna is very interesting. And another interesting part to me is that things repeat itself. ISKCON started then in the 60s in America, and now they're starting again in so many places. Yeah? In one way, we are again in the same boat as they were then. You know? We also have to break new ground. But we have no Prabhupada present, right, to just do it for us. And sometimes it's thinking how to do it. But then when we look back at how they did it, then we get some hints of what we can do and how we can do it. So it is very nice and very interesting. And we see that purity is the force, and purity means Krishna in the center. The most important thing is Krishna. And other things are the disguise. But the disguise may never become the substance, as it sometimes does. Because then things come watered down, and then just like Vyasadeva, one becomes depressed. Who wrote down so many Vedic rituals, but just watered it down so much there was no more Krishna. And he just, I don't know what's wrong with me. Not so alive in these days. So it's so nice that all that is also included in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Very complete. This year. Okay. I'll stop because time is flying as usual. So, if there are any questions,
on your concept of animals, not one size thing. You said Sanatana Goswami said there are five qualities which you should learn from the dog. Can you repeat them?
Not just now.
What is the way?
Not Sanatana Goswami, it's Chanakya Pandit said. But then I had just read it, and now it's long ago. I'm not good at lists of five and lists of six, and I always. So just now I can't really remember. Obviously, the dog is faithful, and he always comes back. Yeah? Even if you kick him away, you know, you kick him away and he still comes back. Yeah? No matter how bad you treat him, he comes back. That was one of them. But otherwise, you'll find them in Chanakya's Niti Shastra, you know, there's this little books, Chanakya's Niti Shastra. Of course, Prabhupada didn't translate that, but Prabhupada used to quote it many times, Chanakya. He, although Chanakya is considered a mundane moralist and a mundane philosopher, Prabhupada would consider him very intelligent. He was a Brahmana who was advising the kings. So, yeah, I have to look it up. Yeah. Okay. But otherwise, you look it up. Chanakya's Niti Shastra. And when you find it, you send to him.
Yes. Somewhere I understood you find it better to engage the cow by using her milk than changing her. But on the other hand, I have really also the experience if you change to animals, that they really hear something. I mean, they behave different.
Yes. And then, so there's another story where there was an insect in the room. Yeah, and Prabhupada was chanting to the insect. Okay, and then he opened the window and said, "I give you the world." Yeah. No, so Prabhupada also chanted. I guess, but we shouldn't have too many expectations from that. They are so covered over. But although they respond, and some animals are devotees and some animals are demons, yeah. It's obvious that some animals are total demons, right? Some nasty Doberman Pinscher, you know, it's like, just waiting all day, you know, is there someone? There's definitely envy there. And Prabhupada said, in Vrindavan, the animals have no envy. They're free from envy. And so some animals are really devotees. And we have seen many, we can tell many devotee stories about animals. In ISKCON, how animals became real devotees. And there's just many stories about dogs, you know, that used to pay obeisances. Yeah, things like this, and dogs that came to the temple at the last of their life and died right in front of the temple. Things like that. Yeah. In India, in Vrindavan, there are many animal stories. I have a few. One about this in Vrindavan, in the courtyard, we have this big tree. It's a mount tree, and there's we. As the years went by, there were so many birds and so many monkeys coming in that we made a net over the courtyard, a metal net, to keep them out. And then, but that tree was growing, and it was a holy tree, you know, so how could we cut the tree, right? So it was a problem. So the tree started to grow right through the net, and then the branches grew through the net and started to break the net, and then we tried to fix it around the branches, but we didn't want to cut any branches, yeah, because, you know, we're not going to cut that tree. So in this way, there were some holes, you know, and one monkey knew about these holes. So at that time, we were taking prasadam in the temple room, and we had all the prasadam nicely in rows of temple room. And then after all the devotees would leave, then that monkey would come down and sit down behind an empty plate on the mats, you know, these mats, you roll up. The monkey sit down in front of the empty plate. What could we do? Just give a plate, right? Just don't, you know, act as if it's totally normal and give a plate. What can you do? This monkey is a devotee. Yeah? So in Vrindavan, because the animals are all devotees, they are so eager for prasadam that what they do things that they would never do anywhere else. We had, when the devotees would carry the prasadam from the kitchen, which was in the Gurukul building, to the temple, and walk with the buckets, right? Then outside, there were birds who would attack. The birds which just fly and which just go for the bucket. And scoop up some prasadam, right? Grab some prasadam and fly away with it. You know? Go like, wow, look at those birds. So eager, yeah. So many things. I saw many things. I saw also that, yeah, there was a family of dogs, you know, and they were like a real family, somehow or other. They had a real family life going, and they were all brown, you know. So brown husband, brown wife, and brown little puppies. Eh? But then some calamity was there, you know, calamities happen, and the male dog, someone gave poisons or something, and a whole bunch of dogs died. The male dog died, and the little dogs died, and the female dog survived. And she was like, she wasn't eating, and she was just not moving, and just staying in the place where the body had been lost, and not moving from there, just staying there, and just fasting, yeah, totally fasting. Yeah, so like, you know, sentiments which go beyond animal. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's so human, yeah, so human that it's almost like too much. Yeah. So also quite in Vrindavan, the animals sometimes display very exalted human nature, devotional nature. Where we can understand that they're actually great souls, not ordinary souls. But anywhere in the world, animals can also develop devotional mood. He said many of the elephants who used to carry the deities in the South Indian temples where this is going on, they became devotees. Yeah. Some of them. The story is like how some of these animals at the last moment of their life just went into the temple and then went down. Because they teach these animals also to go down, and they went down and died. So many stories about devotee elephants and so on. And devotee animals. Just like when parrots chant Hare Krishna, they must get some benefit. Obvious. But still, Prabhupada said we should not chant like parrots. He said when a parrot chants Hare Krishna at the time of death, it may not go back to God. But obviously, it gets benefit, better birth at least.
I wake up.
Next life song. Bhakta, new Bhakti. Also. Big dog song.
I don't know.
Who knows? And then there's the story about this rat that went on the altar and tried to eat the giwig that was going out, and then the whiskers, the hairs, this mustache, the whiskers, they touched that gilam, and then that caused the gilam to burn again. And for that devotional service, that rat got a human body. So I think that Satsarup Maharaj's books, Chota, right, have some merit, you know. I mean, he wrote like about these mouse. You read the books, of course, everybody read Chota. Yeah.
You read something? No, Chota.
Yeah, read about Chota. No? Yes, they're nice books. It's very nice books. It's just basically just stories, but how these mice living in the temple, they're also devotees. There's a whole thing about Chota is then a particular mouse, and he has to, he goes to travel to another city and gets involved with some heavy mice, you know, some gang of mice, and really nasty guys, you know. Yeah. And then he's doing his preaching. It's not easy, but somehow or other, he's maintaining his spiritual life. So there's there are definitely many animals connected to our temples.
Yeah.
You know, you think that the bird who sits on that little branch out there is a different bird. Forget it. It's the same bird that comes every day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, that bird wants his prasada. Yeah. Now he just flew away. He's coming back. You know. So he was humble when we started to talk about it. Doesn't want to be glorified. It's a typical devotee mentality. So these birds are also devotees. They're prasada medics. Yeah, just like people, prasada medics. Like, I like it about Heidelberg. I mean, you're telling the restaurant is going to have people there. Where were you? And they must have all these years just hanging out for prasada. I don't know how many years it is. 5 years, 6 years, how many years is it now?
Some even more than 10 years.
10 years, 10 years, no prasada. No prasada. And then finally, prasada. Very nice. So animals also. The same animals. I think Vrindavan was in charge of the restaurant. I was studying the monkeys, and I began to recognize him because I was sitting there every day, and you could see them every day, so you know who's who. You know. You see, they're all the same monkeys coming every day. Yeah, what that was. So animals also become the monkeys. They're in Anamoya, so Prasadam is the name. Huh?
And the Pumrita Maharaj said in his lecture that they had this center, like a shop and some spiritual programs, and he said, and the glue is prasadam.
And the what?
The glue.
The glue is
prasadam. The glue is prasadam. You just glue it together as prasadam.
Oh, I see. The glue is prasadam. I see. Stop. Okay. It's always at the end of the class when you talk too much about prasadam, it means it's done.